Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to the STEM-Powered Women Podcast. I'm your host, Brittany A.J. Maricki, the founder of Sisters in STEM. If you're new to our audience and don't really know who we are, Sisters in STEM is a multimedia platform aimed toward empowering women of color in their daily lives and their passion for science, technology, engineering, and math. I created this podcast to showcase empowered women, STEM-powered women. Today in our guest chair is an eye care advocate and recent doctoral grad, Dr. Nishan Presley. She's going to share a little about her journey to become an optometrist, and you may be surprised that it didn't take as long as you would think. She received her doctorate in 3 years after graduating with her bachelor's degree. How, sis? We're chatting about a few of the eye diseases that heavily affect the Black community. And just a heads up, her words were so insightful that after we recorded this, I immediately booked an appointment with an eye doctor, and I have my new pairs of glasses right now. I don't want to spoil it too much for you, so let's get to it. Say hey, sis.
Hey, sis. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited, too. Thank you for joining me.
You're welcome.
I saw you on Instagram, and I just knew I had to have you for the show. I'm really glad that we finally got a chance to connect.
Yes, me too.
Now, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yes, so I'm Dr. Nishan Presley, and it still feels a little weird saying Dr. Nishan Presley because I just graduated on May 25th. I'm an Orlando-based optometrist who specializes in comprehensive eye health and vision care. So what I like to do is, of course, help people see to their best ability, but on the outside of the practice, I like to shop, I like to work out, and I just like to enjoy life to the fullest.
Nice. Now, what truly kicked off your interest in optometry? Were you fascinated with how eyes work and how we're able to see?
Yeah, well, actually, my mother told me that I was going to be an optometrist. And I know that sounds crazy, but I was in seventh grade, and my mom was like, "What do you want to do?" And I was like, "I have no clue." And she was like, "I think you should be an optometrist." So that really planted the seed. But throughout my life, I've definitely shadowed other professions. But when I got to high school and actually being a senior in high school, I was able to shadow my local optometrist. And that's when I truly fell in love with the career as a whole. Because I honestly believe that people take the vision for granted. We wake up, we open our eyes, and we see. But there are some people who don't have that ability, and just being able to help them is what really, really, really made me interested in optometry, and that's why I love it to this day.
See, mamas be knowing.
Yeah.
They definitely know. Now, what has been your journey to get your MD? We all know med school isn't a piece of cake, but You managed to complete yours in 3 years?
Yeah. So I always like to talk about my three-year journey to optometry. And I also like to educate as well. So technically, I didn't go to medical school. Some people think, you know, doctor is just medical school, but there's so many different forms of doctors and there's so many different ways you can get there. So for me specifically, and just for optometry, you don't go to medical school, but you go to optometry school, which is still a doctoral professional program. And most optometry programs are 4 years long. So that's the traditional path. You go, you get your bachelor's and your undergrad. That could be 3 or 4 years, depending on what program you're in. And then you go to optometry school, which can be 4 years or 3 years if you did the accelerated path like myself. So for my undergraduate, I went to the Norfolk State University, which is an HBCU in Norfolk, Virginia, and I loved it.
Okay.
I had my major was biology with a double minor in biomedical engineering and chemistry.
Wow.
And from there, I went to Salus University, also known as the Pennsylvania College of Optometry, located in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where I was accepted into the Accelerated Scholars Optometry Program, which is 3 years long. And just a fun fact, I'm actually the first Black student to be accepted into that program ever.
Congrats!
So it was really awesome. Yeah, to open those doors and, you know, just show them that we can be in this realm as well.
Congratulations. That is really cool.
Thank you.
So what are we talking about with time? Because you mentioned Norfolk in Norfolk University, and then you also went to the optometry school. So what is that time-wise?
So do you mean time in terms of?
In terms of
4 years.
Yeah, so you spent 4 years in undergrad and then went straight to the OD?
Yeah, so I did just go straight through, and that's common, and for some, that's not common. I have friends who did 4 years in the undergraduate program, but then took a break, and then they decided that they wanted to go to optometry school. But I must also say, just like you have to take the MCAT to get into medical school, or the DAT for dental school, you have to take the OAT for optometry school. And the OAT is more or less just optometry admissions test, that it's the standardized test that you have to score a certain point value to be accepted into an optometry program. Now, in the United States, there's about 20 optometry schools scattered throughout, and there's two in Canada as well. So there may be some difficulties getting into optometry school, especially if you don't have the scores or the GPA that other applicants have. So the average score on the OAT is a 300, and the average GPA, depending on school, is usually above a 3.0. And that's definitely what you want to aim for. So I know some friends who may not have had a 3.0 GPA from undergrad, or may not have gotten a good enough OAT score, did have to take that break in between undergrad and optometry school just to give themselves some more time, and or to take some more classes to get their GPA up, or to just so focus and study a little bit harder for the OAT to get their score higher.
So you can pretty much study whatever you want in undergrad and then still go to optometry school.
Yeah.
Oh.
You can. And I will say, and I always suggest anyone who asks me, it's best to do to have a major in chemistry or biology, because just like any other school, optometry school also has prerequisites. And say if you have a major in kinesiology, or if you have a major in political science, you don't have those prerequisite courses in chemistry or in physics or in organic chemistry that you need for optometry school. So it's not always about what you major in, but it's just easier if you major in biology or chemistry, so you can already have those prerequisites and you're not spending extra money to take courses just to be able to apply to optometry school.
Now, why is optometry different? Because I've spoken to a couple of doctors on the show, and they've, you know, they explain, okay, I went to undergrad and then I had to go to MD and then I can do my specialization. In my head, I pictured optometry being one of the specializations after med school. Why is it different?
Yeah, so the way that eye care industry is set up, you have an optician, you have an optometrist, and then you have an ophthalmologist. Now, an optician is just someone, say you walk into your local Vision Works or walk into your local eye practice, they're the ones that help you pick out glasses and fit glasses. So that's one side of the eye care industry. The second part of the eye care industry is optometry. So as an optometrist, we are still doctors. We do not go to a medical school, but we specialize in being able to check vision. We're able to check the health of your eyes, and we're also able to diagnose and treat eye diseases. Now, for the third part of eye care, you have ophthalmology. And with that, like you said, they go to medical school, and then they're able to specialize further into their ophthalmology. And with that, that profession or that part of eye care is able to do surgeries. So they're able to do fixing retinal detachments. They're able to put certain injections in the eye. They're able to do cataract surgeries. And that all depends on the state as well, because some optometrists are able to do certain surgeries in different states. But I will say that's the basics between the three parts of the eye care industry: your optician, your optometrist, and your ophthalmologist.
Okay, that's very interesting. So you don't really want to have to get all the way to the ophthalmologist. You want to just stay with your optometrist or the one at your local Vision Works.
Well, I will say
serious is wrong.
I will say for ophthalmology, well, optometry versus ophthalmology, I did not want to do surgeries. So just like I was able to shadow optometry when I was coming up in high school, I was also able to shadow ophthalmologists. And that's just not something I wanted to do. So I always say that that's why it's so important to shadow before you decide a path that you want to go down for your career. I realize I'm a little bit more squirmy around blood. I don't want to cut into anything. It just wasn't for me. So with that, I'm still happy that there was another part of the eye care industry where I was able to still work with and show my love for helping people see outside of just doing surgeries on them all day.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
And yeah, it's awesome. And I will say, some people just think optometry is just, like you said, at your local vision works. But that's not necessarily as far as we can go. There's a lot of optometrists that own their own practices. There's a lot of optometrists who work with legislature. So some people look at optometry and just think, oh, you know, it's just, you're just giving me glasses, you're just giving me contacts. But it's so much more than that. And we're actually your primary eye care provider. People determine ophthalmologists as a secondary eye care provider because we're the ones who refer you to them. Say, if you do need a surgery, I'm going to refer you to the surgeon, but then you'll also come back to me for all your follow-ups. So we're still a primary eye care provider that will refer you to an ophthalmologist if need be.
That is very interesting. Now, did you come across a lot of diversity while you were in these programs? Because you went to an HBCU. Was it a vast difference going into optometry school, or did you still have a community to lean
on? It honestly was, I always say it was a huge cultural shock for me, going back into the real world, as I like to say, because when you go to an HBCU, more or less everything is black. Like, your professors are black, all your friends are black, you have Greek life, and I went to a majority white high school, so that's why I was really wanted to go to an HBCU because I just wanted to have that experience and I loved it. And I will definitely 100% say HBCUs are needed. They need more support, especially from us in our community. And going from an HBCU to going to optometry school and then being the only one, it was honestly pretty difficult for me. But over time, I was able to make some new friends. Even though I was the only one in my 3-year program, at my school, there's also a 4-year program. And there were about 5 black students in the 4-year program that I was able to meet and kind of talk to and just kind of be myself with. So it was hard, but after a while, you more or less get used to it. And then you just go on with your everyday life because this is what the real world looks like.
Yep.
When it comes to optometry specifically, because like you said, there's a lack of diversity and there's a lack of diversity in the profession.
Yep. It sounds just like how a lot of us that go to PWIs, predominantly white institutions, have to adjust. Cause I know I went to a majority black high school and then going to college, I was just like, huh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's do this.
Now, circling back to your 3-year program, you said there's only about 20 optometry schools in the U.S. How many of them have that 3-year program?
Honestly, the school I went to, the Pennsylvania College of Optometry, is the only one with an accredited 3-year program.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's one of the first. It's one that's been shown to work. And that's why I signed up for it, because I was like, if I can get out in 3 years and save a year in tuition, like, why would I not sign up for this? Like, yeah, sign me up right now. Let's do this.
So did that mean an accelerated course load or?
Yes.
Okay.
So what the main difference between the traditional 4-year optometry program versus the accelerated 3-year program is that we are on the quarter system. So instead of going to school for 2 semesters and then having a summer break or having an extended winter break, we went to school year round and we only had a week break between quarters. So we had a shorter winter break, only about a week long. We didn't have a summer break. But honestly, that's perfectly fine with me. I will pay that price so I can get out a year sooner. So I thought it was really, really awesome. We still had the same amount of credit overall. We still had the same amount of clinical experience overall. And we actually had a higher boards pass rate as a class than a traditional four-year program. So some people think, well, you're just zooming through all the information. But we passed boards at 91% versus a traditional program. The national average is about 78%. So
Wow. It
really shows that you're able to do it. And even though it's only 3 years, if you are good at managing your time, if you're good at really just focusing and honing down on what you need to do, it's something that can really be done.
Wow, that is really good. And it put you in a better position to be, you know, more marketable to your future employers.
It definitely did, because since it was such a new program, they were like, wow, tell me about that. And when they hear about how rigorous it is, that automatically speaks to your work ethic.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can handle that, oh, you can definitely handle being here. I know you're going to be a great clinician and be able to handle things because you were able to do that rigorous program.
Nice. Now, if someone, like, how can more women take advantage of this program? They have to apply specifically to that Pennsylvania school?
Yes.
Do they, anything else they should do to prepare for getting into it?
Yeah. So, with that program, there are specifics, or there are certain things that you need just to be allowed to apply for the program. So earlier I was talking about the OAT score. So in this program, you need at least a 330. Now, before I said the average is about a 300 to make you a competitive optometry student.
Mm-hmm.
So for this program, you need at least a 330. You also need to have a 3.5 GPA or higher. And on top of that, they want you to do 100 shadowing hours with an optometrist. And some programs, they don't really specify how long they want you to shadow. And then the main difference between the interview process with this program and the traditional four-year program is they do something called an MMI, or multiple mini interviews. And I know some medical schools do this, and some other programs do this type of interview style as well. But instead of you just coming in and saying, or, you know, sitting down, oh, I want to be an optometrist because these are my strengths, these are my weaknesses. Instead, they have these prompts written on or on the door, and you kind of read the prompts, and you go in and you sit down and you talk to one of the doctors about ethically what you would do with the prompts or with whatever the prompt was asking you. So, for example, one of the prompts was, you're a chemical engineer at this lab, and you found out that more or less there's this airborne illness that's going to kill everyone. Would you go home and tell your family, or would you stay at the lab and try to find a way to stop it? And then you have to kind of go in there and explain yourself and let them know, this is what I would do, this is why. And it really speaks to your character and how you would handle stressful situations. So it's definitely a different way to kind of pick your brain and see where your mind is at versus just having the regular interview style and just asking why you want to be an optometrist and why do you want to go to optometry school.
Wow. I know I keep saying wow so much. You're doing it. It's showing me that you are super smart, number one. And that you guys have to deal with pretty much life or death situations all the time. And they are preparing you for that just from the get. They are just making sure that you would be ready to handle this when you get into the field. I like that a lot. What are the job prospects looking like after graduation? So now you're out of it. I don't know, are you mm-hmm. still going through the struggle of looking for a job, or since you were in the accelerator program, it put you at the top?
Honestly, I'm not, and I'm so happy that I'm not. So job prospects for optometry are great. If I remember reading this correctly, optometry was definitely like the top 20 healthcare positions with expected growth like through like about 10 to 15% over the next 4 years, I believe. So long story short, everyone's eyes goes bad. Everyone has eye problems and their eyes go bad at some point. So we're always going to have a job. There's never going to be a lack for the need of eye care.
Mm.
In terms of finding a job, a lot of students in optometry actually find a job before they graduate. There was actually a study that showed that about 51.3% of new grads find a job before they graduate. And those who didn't find a job before they graduate, it takes about 3 weeks to find a job. Now, there's so many different modalities of optometry. You can go into private practice, which is basically your mom and pop eye care practice where you specifically know the owners. It's not owned by a big name company such as LensCrafters or VisionWorks. There's something called corporate optometry, which is where you see your Walmart opticals, your Target opticals, your VisionWorks, your LensCrafters. And then there's, you can work in a hospital setting, which is awesome. So if you still want to have that hospital type modality, you can do that in optometry. You can work with the legislature helping to pass certain optometric laws. And you can work in a group practice, which is what I'm actually doing, where I work with multiple doctors. So I work with optometrists and ophthalmologists. So that's called an OD-MD practice. Hmm. So you kind of get a feel for both worlds. And there's a huge medical emphasis in OD-MD practices, which I love, and which is why I chose a position like that.
Okay. So that way your job will be pretty much a one-stop shop for anyone. If they do have an issue,
yeah,
when they'll come see mm-hmm. you. And if you're like, oh, no, I'm sorry, you got to see the ophthalmologist. We need to escalate this a little bit.
Right. We need to send you for surgery right now.
Yeah. And that's going to be in Orlando, where you're located.
Yep. So I'm staying in the sunny state of Florida. I'm originally from Pennsylvania, but those winters were getting harsher and harsher, so I couldn't do it anymore.
It'll be a nice change of pace.
Yes.
Did you know that you can get 20% off at the Sisters in STEM store? Use the code STEMPOWER20 at checkout on sistersinstem.org/shop for your discount. You could be rocking our new Empowered Woman tee or our slogan, Life's Better with a Sister in STEM. You'll love your shirt that much more knowing that you got it for less. Save that coin where you can, honey. Now, before we get back to the show, I have a little trivia for you. Here's your clue. Who am I? I was the first African-American to complete a residency in ophthalmology. In 1986, I invented the laser phaco probe for cataract treatment, for which I became the first Black woman to hold a medical patent. Do you know who that is? It's Patricia Bath. Now you can spread the knowledge too. Back to the show.
Now, have you seen the effects of how the lack of representation in the optometry field affects our society? Because I know there are different diseases and everything that, that hone in on our community. Things that come to mind for me are just like, you know, cataracts and glaucoma.
Right.
I can swear that every old Black person has always talked about their glaucoma.
You're right.
Can you speak on how those diseases affect us and then how more representation within the field can help us?
Yeah, definitely. So African Americans have some of the highest rates of vision impairment and blindness due to eye disease. And unfortunately, not too many African Americans get their regular comprehensive dilated eye exams. The dilated portion is what's most important. Some people just like to go to the eye doctor and just see and just check to see if they can see the 20/20 line. But eye care is so much more than just seeing the 20/20 line. It's really important to get those drops. People are like, oh, you're putting these drops in my eyes. Yes. It's really important to do the dilated portion of your eye exam because it can help save your sight. So if that's so we can check your eyes to make sure that there's nothing going on. So the main diseases that we hear about throughout our life that affect our people, such as high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, or any type of heart disease, affect the eye as well. And most people don't know this, but the eye is one of the first places that signs of high blood pressure or diabetes is found.
Hmm.
And the way that we're able to see that is from putting those dilating drops into your eyes. We open up your pupil, we shine some lights back there, and we're checking to see how your blood vessels are reacting to things. We're checking to see if your blood vessels are tortuous or if there's bleeding in your blood vessels in the back of your eye. And if we see that there's bleeding in the back of your eye, that tells us that there's bleeding everywhere in your body and that something needs to be checked out. So glaucoma, like you stated, is another vision-threatening disease that affects African Americans at a higher rate and at a much younger age than other ethnicities.
Mm.
So this is why, for one, representation is important, because we need to be educating our people about these eye diseases and how it can cause blindness, and most of the time, preventable blindness. And honestly, it's a lot easier to hear it coming from someone who looks like you and believing them than someone who doesn't look like you, because, like, for instance, my grandma, she just thinks that everyone's trying to get over on her. But no, grandma, like, you really have this problem. Listen to me. So if she saw someone who looked like her in that field, she may actually take that that information and the knowledge that the doctor was giving and apply it and actually listen to the instructions to help save her sight.
And that is really true, because I know that if I really wish I could have black doctors all the way around from head to the toe.
Yeah,
I am terrible. I haven't been to the eye doctor in a long time. My first and only eye prescription was when I was in a junior in high school.
And wow.
I'm out of college now.
It's time.
And I know that if someone would, like, just hearing you say this right now, it's making me think, okay, I need to go set an appointment right now. So that way I can get my eyes checked out. And I'm sure that a lot of our families would trust that information coming from someone who looked like them.
Exactly. I 100% agree.
My grandfather, I call him my pappy, he is going through eye issues right now. He's having, he's been told that he has a retina problem. Mm-hmm. And it is, I'm going to have you explain what that even means too, because from what I can tell is he really can't see a whole lot now. It's kind of like the beginning of blindness. I asked him, like, okay, are you legally blind? Because I'm handing him something and he's grabbing my hand first before he grabs the thing that's in my hand.
Wow.
Or if he's saying, like, oh, what's that over there? Is that a sock? I'm like, no, that's an envelope.
Oh
goodness. So what's a retina problem? And is that a symptom of another one of the things that are popular in our community?
Honestly, it's really hard to exactly say what's wrong with your pappy, but I will just give some background on the retina. So the retina is the back of our eye, and the retina is what allows us to see. So, and there's a total of 10 layers in the retina. And in one of those 10 layers, we have something called photoreceptors. And these photoreceptors are what help us perceive light, and also sends information to the brain to allow us to determine what we see. So many people, or some people may have heard of something called an optic nerve. So the optic nerve is more or less, think of like a cable cord that runs from your eye to your brain. So this cable cord is in the back of the eye, it's in the retina. And if your retina is damaged, that means that cable cord can also be damaged. And if the cable cord is damaged, that more or less dampens the amount of light you see, that dampens the information getting back to the brain. Therefore, we cannot perceive light, nor can we see. So there are many retina issues that affect the African-American community. Earlier, I was talking about diabetes. There's something called diabetic retinopathy that affects the retina. So diabetic retinopathy is more or less bleeding in the back of the eye. You have buildup of fluid sometimes that's takes your vision from, say, a good 20/20 to 20/100. Now it's really hard for you to see. I was also talking about high blood pressure earlier. There's something called hypertensive retinopathy that's in the back of the eye. So with these blood pressure spikes or this ongoing high blood pressure issue, it can actually more or less cause more bleeding in the back of the eye, therefore affecting your retina, then affecting your sight. So there's so many different retinal issues that more or less causes issues in the back of the eye and then also decreases our ability to see.
Wow. I am really taking my vision for granted.
Yes.
There are so many things that could go wrong with our eyes that I'm not even completely aware of. This is eye-opening.
Yeah.
No pun intended. Now, I'm curious of your opinion on how are, you know, because we're in an age now where everyone's looking at a screen 24/7.
Yes, yes,
I am
yes,
a
yes.
designer. I am always working on the computer to do the projects. I feel like that is messing up my eyes, period. Like, that is what is making my vision deteriorate. Can you tell me your opinion on it and what actually is going on here?
Yeah, so I always like to say, as a modern day optometrist, I understand the importance of seeing clearly, but also having your eyes feel good. So like you said, sometimes you're on those devices and you're like, this is messing with our eyes. So from the digital devices that we use, our iPads, our cell phones, our desktop computers, UV exposure from the sunlight, our dietary lifestyles, it really subjects our eyes to more strain than ever before. So we're starting to actually see that effects of that constant stress on the eye, which is why it's really important, for one, to get your eyes checked, and for two, to check to see if there's any type of glasses that your local optometrist can provide you with to help decrease that strain. You may have heard of blue blocker technology that's offered in glasses nowadays, where there's an extra coating that can go on your lenses that filters out the blue light, which has been found to one, cause stress on the eye, and two, to actually cause macular changes or retinal changes, like we talked about earlier. So with this blue light, or the blue blocker technology, like I said, it helps to filter out the light that is found on our cell phones, that's found on the screens of our iPads and our laptops, because we're looking at them more and more and more, especially kids. You know how many kids I see just having an iPad and staring at an iPad all day, starting at like 1 year old, your kids on the iPad.
Yeah.
So this is so new for our society, which is why I can bet my money on it. In about 20 to 25 years, there's going to be so many studies coming out showing how this blue light and just the effects of being on these devices is affecting our eyes, because the children are going to grow up and we're going to see all these issues possibly that is really causing this, and we're causing, or all these issues that may come from, I should say, this digital eye strain that is called.
And we're probably going to end up seeing our kids in glasses younger and younger, because the most thing we would get when we were little is don't sit too close to the TV. But now they've got the cell phone, the iPad, everything directly in their face all day long. Yeah. You're messing up their eyes from the minute they're born.
Exactly. And so there's actually been some studies showing that kids need to go outside. Kids need to play. There are some kids who may be really nearsighted, what we call our myopic. When you're nearsighted, you're able to see well up close, but it's really hard for you to see far away. And being indoors and kind of focusing on something for long periods of time there's actually been a correlation shown between that versus kids who are outdoors and kind of looking around, looking at the trees. They aren't as nearsighted, or I should say the progression of nearsightedness wasn't as much as a kid who didn't go outdoors enough and more or less look around versus, you know. So that was pretty interesting, because honestly, when I was younger, I was always outside. I have little cousins, they don't want to go outside. All they want to do is play their game. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also going to have an effect on those children's eyes, and also the vision impairment that they might get in the future.
Wow. That, it's sad, but I'm hoping that doctors like you can help bring us into the future where that hopefully won't be that big of a problem for our society. We're going to have to adapt. Right. We're going to have to create new ways. You can put all of the degrees and the research that you've done to work, and bam, you can bring us there.
And like you said, that's why representation is so important. And that's why it's good to educate our people about this as well.
Now I'm going to switch it up just a little bit.
Okay.
Because we've been touching on all the heavy stuff, but I want our listeners to know that just because you work hard doesn't mean that you don't play hard too.
I know, that's right.
So you were recently you got engaged. Congratulations.
Yes, thank you so much. Thank you.
And I am curious, if you had a dream wedding, where would it be? Or is there a destination or something that you would like to incorporate into a dream wedding?
Oh my gosh. My dream wedding, it would definitely be a destination wedding, possibly in like Bora Bora. That's 100% where I want to go. White sandy beaches, beautiful water, just relaxation all around. That is 100% my dream. But I know it's not going to happen, unfortunately, because my grandmother will not get on the flight. She will not get on the plane. We all have those members who refuse to fly. So realistically, my fiance Chad and I, we're going to have our wedding in Philadelphia. And it's going to be September of 2020. So no specific date picked out yet, but we know it's going to be in Philadelphia because that's more or less where we're both from. And we want as many or as much of our friends and family to be there as possible.
Nice. That'll be really cool. At least you have plenty of time to plan.
Yes.
And it's going to fly by. So
I can imagine. I'm already like getting anxiety over it. And I'm just like, no, I don't know. I have no clue. But I purchased some books. I'm going to be reading, researching. Mm-hmm. Because it's time. I have to get this thing planned.
You've got it, sis. I know you do.
Thank you.
Now, my other question is, if there's one life-altering thing you could do right now, what would it be? Mm. It can be as simple as you want or something that you've dreamed of.
Wow. Life altering. That's tough because there's so many things I want to do. Mm-hmm. I don't want to make it too personal, but I guess I could. So
go right ahead.
One thing that has always, I wish was something that could have been, or I will say, I wish my dad was in my life. That's one thing that if I could alter that aspect of my life, I wish he was in it. So my father has never been in my life, nor have I ever met him. So I have a very strong mother who has pushed me towards success and has told me that I can do anything in the world that I want to do. But one life altering aspect I would change is definitely have a father figure.
Wow. And you know, I can feel you on that so much because I didn't meet my dad until I was 13.
Wow.
And I always think like, when I was younger, I would think like, oh man, I wish he was here. I wish he was, you know, I was having a two-parent household.
Right,
but
right.
For both of us, we wouldn't have that close bond with our mothers. Mm-hmm. If he was in that picture,
exactly.
We grew such a connection with them because of, you know, we always had to rely on one another.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to speak for both of us, but I feel like just from you saying that your mom was like, oh, you're going to be an optometrist. And my mom did the same thing. She's like, oh, you're going to be an engineer.
See,
mamas be
known. They know
us that much that they're helping mold in our future.
Yes.
Thank you for sharing that. I know it's definitely personal, but I appreciate
it. You're welcome. But it's honest. We got to keep it real on here, right?
Mm-hmm. Got to keep it real. Now, do you have any advice for young women, sisters looking to get into the field of optometry?
Yeah, definitely. For one, I will say just start by doing some research. Even though my mom told me you're going to be an optometrist, I still had to take it upon myself to research the career and shadow. So shadowing your local optometrist is also really important. You want to make sure that this is a good field for you. I will say for women, this is a great field to get into. It's very low stress. You're really on call. You work regular hours, maybe about a 40-hour week. So there's a great work-life balance, and there's solid prospects to improve and grow within the field. There's possibilities for practice ownership. There's possibilities to own multiple practices and have people working for you, which is my end goal. And I will say, optometry has become more female forward lately, meaning that there's been a gender shift in optometry where there are more women than men coming into the profession than ever seen statistically. So it's becoming more woman oriented, which shows that this is such a great career, especially for women.
Nice. Now, do you have any final parting advice for the STEM-powered women studying in school and in the workforce still trying to find their way?
The advice that I would give my sister in STEM is just to stay motivated. Keep 10 toes down, keep your eyes on the prize, and don't let anyone tell you what you can't be. And because you don't see someone in your specific field that may look like you, who says that you're not the one that needs to make way? So go for it. Never take no for an answer and just stick to your guns. And I know that you will 100% be successful.
I love it. Thank you so much, Nishan.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me on the show. This has been amazing.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. I love talking with all of the ladies because I get empowered with every episode. And this just invigorates me. It makes me want to go out there and do more.
Yes.
See, all of this STEM-powered women advice is for me. It's for all of y'all, but it's for me too.
Oh, I'm gonna do this. Oh, this is good.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for tuning into another episode of the STEM-powered Women Podcast. I hope you learned something from our discussion that you'll be able to share with others. Visit sistersinstem.org for podcast episodes, stories and advice from your sisters, and much more. Make sure you follow us at The Sisters in STEM on all social media. You can also find me on Instagram at Brittany A. Joy. Whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your shows, please subscribe so you'll know exactly when a new episode drops. And while you're at it, go ahead and give us 5 stars and leave an awesome review to show your sister some love. Remember, sis, you are an empowered woman, a STEM-powered woman. You've got this. I'll see you on the next one. Bye.